We'll read from the 35th verse of the chapter 18 through the 10th verse of the 19th chapter. So it's Luke's Gospel, chapter 18, verse 35. As he drew near to Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. And hearing a crowd going by, he inquired what this meant. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." He cried out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." It's the same refrain that we saw the woman of Cana, the Syrophoenician woman, cry out. This is a Jew in Jericho. And those who were in front of him rebuked him. That's the man that's crying out, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus stopped and commanded him to be brought to him. And when he came near, he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Recover your sight. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. He entered Jericho and was passing through. There was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small of stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled, "He has gone to be in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, half of my goods I give to the poor. And since I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." On that tremendous word, we ask God to bless it to our hearts. Of Luke's Gospel, chapter 19, we read, "For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." The Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. The scene is set in Jericho. Jericho was an ancient historic city, but it was also a very modern and vibrant community. It's described in the Old Testament as a city of palm trees. And there were numerous springs in and around the city. And that land was receiving a great deal of rainfall, and those springs brought life, greenery. And where there is greenery in the Palestine, then you find human beings, because obviously where there is water and there is greenery, there is vegetation for animals to eat and also for plants to grow. And so Jericho historically was like an oasis. It's reckoned in terms of archaeological digs that there were at least 20 different settlements throughout history that were established in the city of Jericho. Mark Antony and Cleopatra. Mark Antony gave to Cleopatra the gift of the city of Jericho because of his love for her and because of the wealth that was associated with Jericho. King Herod, during this time that we're reading of tonight, he invested heavily in the city. He built a hippodrome, a theatre. He built aqueducts to irrigate the gardens in the winter palace he built. There were tree-lined avenues. One of the historians of the time, Josephus, writes and says, it was a little paradise. And if you were a dusty traveller making your way up to Jerusalem, Jericho would have been a haven of havens to have stopped in. It was also but a very cosmopolitan and modern community. Ancient in its establishment, but the bright lights shone in Jericho. And one of the reasons why was because of its trading route location. It was one of those communities that was established on a trading route that took you into Jerusalem. And so there were many, many people who would come to that city and trade. And one of the attractions to the city was the fact that there were a great wealth, deal of wealth was generated by the growing of particular types of plants. And this caused this vibrant community, this cosmopolitan center. Whenever Jesus comes into this city, he causes a great stir. It's phenomenal, just the excitement that Jesus created. If I can use this very reverently, and I mean that, it was like a major superstar coming to town. I'm not saying Jesus was a superstar, but I'm trying to equate the type of atmosphere that was generated by his presence. Never before had they heard of a man who could feed 5,000 people with nothing. Never before had they known of a man who could turn water into wine. A man who was known for giving blind people their sight. We read of that incident in the preceding verses as he makes his way up to Jerusalem, up to Jericho. There's a blind man who cries out to him, and the people want to silence the blind man, but Jesus says, let him come to me. He asks him, what can I do for you? And the blind man asks something that is extraordinary. He says, let me recover my sight. Now, he's not talking there for Jesus to look into his eyes and diagnose the problem. When I had my cataract and I went back to the optician. The optician asked me who the surgeon was. I told him who the surgeon was. He says, well, you're in really good hands. He says, because he's an excellent surgeon. And I can give testimony to the ability to read and see with great clarity. That wasn't what this man was doing. Jesus wasn't being asked just to look into that man's eyes and see what his problem was. The man actually asked Jesus to recover his sight. He asks, this beggar asks, this other man called Jesus Christ, the Son of David, to enable him to see. And he recovers his sight. He sees as a direct result of Jesus speaking to him. The words, recover your sight, your faith has made you well. That's all it takes for this man's sight to be restored. The awe of that, the astonishment of that. That's incredible. And this wasn't a one-off event. This was something that Jesus was doing day after day, week after week. And so when word spreads to Jericho, that he's coming through Jericho, inevitably there's going to be a great deal of excitement. People want to hear. People want to see. People want to be near him. People want to experience his presence. People want to have a sense of, I was there the day Jesus passed through Jericho. I saw Jesus the day he passed through Jericho. I was there on that day. Such was the aura that was created by others because of their communication of what Jesus Christ had been doing. Now, Jesus Christ did not seek that adulation. He did not seek the popularity. He did not seek to be famous. He did not do these things in order to draw attention to himself. It's clear many times that Jesus withdraws on those occasions when the popularity is almost going to, as it were, pick him up and carry him forward. Carry him into a role that he's not going to fulfill. So it's not that Jesus is a publicist who's running ahead of him into Jericho, putting up A4 or A3 bills. Jesus is coming through Jericho later today. He'll be at your street at 3:15. He'll be at your avenue at 4 p.m. If you're here at 6 p.m., you'll see Jesus passing through. There's none of that. It was just word of mouth, excitement and anticipation. Maybe I will see him do something. Maybe I will hear him. They speak of this man as one who speaks with authority. He is not like the Pharisees. He is not like the scribes. When this man stands to his feet and he speaks, he holds people's attention because the words that proceed from his lips, he speaks with such clarity and such authority that we have never heard the like of it before. People want to see Jesus. And then we read about this man. This man, Zacchaeus. There are four things that we know about him. We know his name. We know his profession. We know his something of his character. And we know something about his personal wealth. We also know of his interest in Jesus. Zacchaeus is his name. By profession we read that he is a chief tax collector. Zacchaeus, by the way, means just or righteous. It was very interesting that he would be called just or righteous. Remember that when we come to look at his character, because you'll see that his character is anything but just or righteous. He's a chief tax collector. And Palestine at this time was under the rule of Rome. And the Roman Empire was a huge global entity. And as with all global entities, whether it's America today or China, they consume a large amount of resources from their people. It's amazing how many trillions of money are spent every day in our world in just keeping these so-called world superpowers of Russia and China and America functioning. Well, Rome was the superpower of its day, and it needed huge monetary resources to keep it going, to keep its whole infrastructure going, to keep the army going, to keep the various civil servants going, to keep the emperors and their Caesars and their palaces and their rules. And what they did was, the Romans would go into a region, and they would sell the rights for taxation in that region, both direct and indirect taxation, to someone local. And that local individual, he would buy the rights to that taxation. And his responsibility was to raise annually the figure that the Romans would require of him. And so he would take that amount that he was to raise, and then he would sell that on to district collectors of tax. And those district collectors of tax, they would then be responsible for the gathering of the tax in that particular district. Well, of course, they had to get paid for what they were doing, so they had their cut on top of the taxes. And then the chief tax collector, who had sold off the parcels of territory to the various tax collectors, he had to get his cut. So he would get his cut off the top of what the various tax collectors were collecting. And then he would pay the Romans. And the tax collectors were men who were renowned for their capacity to add on to the taxes. It was just known that if the tax was 10%, and I'm using this as illustrative purposes, they would charge 15 or 20%. That was just common fact. And not only was it known that the tax collectors were men who were making a handsome killing on the taxes, but the tax collectors, who were chief over all the tax collectors, they were making an inordinate amount of money. Phenomenal stream of wealth and income. Absolutely phenomenal. They were like the drug barons of today, if I can use that analogy, where you had the local drug dealer who'd be making his cut off it. But then you had the guys who were running the show over the top. And if you've ever seen any of those television programs of these guys, you'll see they have suitcases loaded full of cash. They have so much cash they can't get rid of it. That's why they open up their various businesses so they can launder all their money. They have so much money they physically can't get rid of it all. Well, the tax collectors, the chief tax collectors, were men who were making inordinate amounts of money. And here was a Jew who was making inordinate amounts of money off the back of his own people for the sake of the Romans who were exerting rule over their land. So if you were a Jew and you were wanting rid of the Roman authorities, you didn't want Roman rule no more. If you were one who was prepared to march the streets and say, no more to Roman rule, although you knew that was never going to happen because the Roman Empire had a military force that no army could ever take over, even though the zealots tried. The next port of call in terms of expressing your disgust was the tax collectors. And certainly if you knew the chief tax collector in your community, he was an object of less than pleasant experiences. And there were three, within the Roman Empire, there were three principal, in this region, there were three principal areas of tax collecting. There was Caesarea, there was Capernaum, where Jesus did most of his ministry in the north of the Sea of Galilee, and there was Jericho. And if you were the chief tax collector in any one of those three regions, then you were into super wealth creation. You were into making money by the bucket load. There were taxes that were being gathered, direct taxes that were being gathered in Jericho because of the trade that was going through Jericho, which meant that this man, Zacchaeus, was a phenomenally wealthy man. His character, well, he tells us something of his character himself. He says in verse 8 that he has defrauded people. He doesn't use, I changed the word, it says if. It's not if in the sense of if maybe I did defraud someone. If by mistake in my transactions I happen to defraud somebody sometime, then I'll try and make this restitution. That's not the way in which that word is. That word is since. It's like, if you're going to the shop, will you bring me back a pint of milk? Well, you don't say that if the person you're speaking to is not going to the shop. Sure, you don't. If they're sitting there in front of the television with a cup of tea and there's plenty of milk in the fridge, you don't turn around and say to them, if you're going to the shop in the next 5 minutes, will you bring me some milk? It's, I'm going to the shop. Well, if you're going to the shop, since you're going to the shop. And it's since I have defrauded people, since I have been dishonest, this man's character has been marked by dishonesty. He's not only defrauded the populace, he's probably defrauded the men who have gathered taxes for him. His character is one of a lying, cheating thief. That's who he is. He's a wee thief. And I can say he's a wee thief because he is small in stature. He is, that's what he is. everything he does is about thieving. All he's interested in is accumulating more and more money. More and more money. That's all he's interested in. And he has the character, and he has the intelligence, and he has the ability to do it. And you see the product of his wealth in the size of the home that he has, that he can keep as many guests as he wants. In this paradise community, in this haven of beauty, in this city once given by Antony to Cleopatra, there were tree-lined avenues, and they had huge houses. And one of the biggest houses in one of the grandest tree-lined avenues in this beautiful, beautiful community was the home of this man. And everybody knew it. Everybody knew whose home that was. That's Zacchaeus, the chief thief in our community, the chief tax collector. He wants to see Jesus. Now, it could have been that he was just wanting to see Jesus out of personal interest. But that surely is not the case. It can't be the case because of the lengths to which he goes to see Jesus. If he had merely been interested in seeing Jesus as a curiosity, he wouldn't have done what he does. He says in verse 3 that he was seeking to see who Jesus was. But on account of the crowd, he could not because he was small stature. As Jesus came into the city of Jericho, and he was surrounded by throngs of people who had come out having heard what he had done and was on his way, this man wanted to see Jesus. And he makes his way to where he hears the noises because there's a cauldron of noise. People are chattering and people are laughing and people speaking. And they can hear the noise passing through the community. And he tries to make contact visually with Jesus, but because he is small in stature, he cannot do it. And so we read that he runs. He runs ahead. Now imagine that. Here is this man who has power in this community. Here is this man who has fame, albeit infamy, in this community. People who have power, people who are well known, don't run in their own community. It's a sign of weakness. They don't run. They don't need to run. As far as they're concerned, they have to present to the world that they are in control. That's part of the mechanism of what they're doing. Part of their business is to present this image of themselves that I, in a sense, am untouchable. I am in authority. I am in control. Running down the street, pulling up your outer garments, says to people, oh, he's in a hurry. There must be something wrong. He scrambles up the tree like a boy, hiding among this large sycamore, hoping that no one will see him. Why does he do that? Well, there's obviously within him some real deep need. It's not a need that can be met with position and authority, because he's at the top of the tree in terms of his profession. There isn't any higher in terms of his salary scale that he can go. He has more money probably than what he can spend. He can have all the material things in terms of food and wine and clothing that he desires. There is nothing that is beyond his wealth. You see, when his life is changed, he says he's going to give away half of what he has, and then he's going to give restitution four times when he only has to give one fifth on top of what he has. This man's wealth was obscene. His position didn't satisfy him. His wealth didn't satisfy him. His relationships weren't satisfying him. His sense of being able to tell other people what to do wasn't satisfying him. His capacity in his mind to have authority over everybody's life in that community by way of taxation. He would look at people in the street and he would measure them according to the amount of money that they were giving to him through the various tax collectors. He knew the material affairs of people in that community. He had knowledge beyond knowledge concerning everybody that was there. He knew your affairs. And yet, inside, he was extremely unhappy. He just could not find that peace that he desired in his life. And so he runs, and he runs up a tree, clambers up it. He wants to see Jesus. He wants to have an encounter with Jesus Christ, because he understands that there's something about this man that is incredibly different. This man, Jesus Christ, has an authority and a power that's off the scale. Zacchaeus knew what power and authority was, but he had never seen anything like what Jesus Christ has. He had never heard of anyone who has the sort of power and authority that Jesus Christ has. He had never understood holiness like he saw in the life of Jesus Christ. He knew what it was to do wrong. He knew that there were people who did what was right. He understood the difference between right and wrong. He knew he was not a good man, but he would have known there were people in the community who were good. But there was nobody in this community who was good like this man, Jesus Christ. This man, Jesus Christ, was on a different level, no matter what way Zacchaeus measured that level. And he runs and he hides up this tree. And Jesus comes along. And Jesus stops. Now, this is the key part of the story. It's not that Jesus and his attention was just gained because this man happened to be up a tree and it seemed odd. The reason why Zacchaeus went into the tree was because he was able to peer through the leaves in the tree, which are large, and see out without being seen virtually. He could hide himself in the tree. Jesus' attention wasn't drawn because he was sauntering down the street in Jericho and he had nothing else to do that day because there was nobody else about, and he's looking all around himself, up the trees, down the street, up into the buildings to see who's there and to see what's going on. There are people pressing in around Jesus physically. The disciples are probably walking like bodyguards on either side of Jesus to give him some breathing space to walk down the avenue. And there are people who are before him, there are people alongside him, and there are people behind him. And there are people shouting at him all the time, "Jesus! Can I? Jesus! Jesus!" There's noise, and there's signs, and there's pictures in his mind, and he's walking along. And he comes to this specific one tree of all the trees that are lined along these avenues as he makes his way up to Jerusalem. He stops at this one tree and everybody's standing looking at him saying, "Why has he stopped at this tree?" We haven't got this stage of tree huggers at this stage in history. Jesus is walking along and he stops at this one tree. And everybody's standing there wondering to themselves, what on earth is he doing? Standing, gazing at the tree. He's already passed how many trees? He's already seen the trees. It's not as if he's come to Jericho to take in the vegetation and to take in the scenery. It's not that he's on a vegetation walking through Jericho to see what's going on. They can't understand it. And then Jesus looks into the tree, and they're all standing looking into the tree. Don't know if you've ever done that. There used to be in Northern Ireland, you go down onto the port church, onto the strand. Some of us used to do this as young men. We'd stand and look up into the sky. Three or four of us, and people would gather around looking at it. And then we would just walk away and leave the people to stand and look there. That's the bad I got up to on a Saturday night with a bag of chips in Port Stewart. I was a really bad boy. There they are. And they're watching at him. And then he says, Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus. Had he met Zacchaeus before? Had he heard Zacchaeus' story? Had there been people who had said to Jesus, there's one man you need to meet when you come to Jericho? Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus, he names him. Hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. The purpose of God in bringing his son to speak to this man who had a need that could not be met in any other way. Zacchaeus, hurry down, for I must stay at your house today. Isn't it an amazing thing when God comes to us and speaks to us by name, speaks to you by name, and says to you, hurry to me, I have dealings with you today. What a wonderful and glorious reality that is in any human being's life, when in the various affairs of your day-to-day life, God comes to you by name, and he speaks to you personally, and he says to you, hurry down, for I must abide, I must dwell, I must have dealings with you today. The need of every single human being on the face of this earth to have specific, personal, particular, purposeful dealings with God. Zacchaeus went to see Jesus. He had a need that he could not find an answer to. He did not know the full extent of how he would find an answer to that, but he knew that he would find it in Jesus Christ. And I would say to you tonight that Jesus Christ genuinely and truly is the only one who can meet the needs in your life and mine. No one else can do it. Because no one else can stand and look as we hide in the tree. No one else can name us. No one else can know our affairs of the heart. No one else can say, I am coming to abide with you. We can look into each other's life and say, can I help you? We don't do that enough. I feel the pain of that in my own life sometimes with regard to you. I think of the times that I've failed you. It hurts me deeply. And I go to God and I ask for his forgiveness for that. But even if I was to know everything about your life in an outward sense, I still couldn't reach into your heart and discern the need of your heart. I am limited. You are limited. You cannot know all that's in my heart. You can only surmise what's really going on in my life. And you can surmise about my life, and I can surmise about your life. And so often we get it wrong because we only see part of the picture. We jump to conclusions. We say, oh, he must be thinking like that because he's done that. But he's not thinking about that at all. He's thinking about something else because there's many, many factors pressing in upon him. But when Jesus Christ comes and says, Zacchaeus, he speaks with authority. He speaks with knowledge. He speaks with understanding. And he says, hurry down. Zacchaeus doesn't say, no, I like the view up the tree. I'm going to stay up here a wee while longer. He comes down because he's a man who has been called by Christ. And he goes and he stays in the house. Jesus goes and he stays in his house. And Zacchaeus, Jesus having spoken to him, confesses his need of repentance. He doesn't just say, I'm sorry. He manifests the reality of his love for Jesus Christ in saying, I'm going to do what I should have done. The other people are astonished at it. The other people are angry. They're grumbling. Why is he going to his house? Does he not know who he is? He is supposed to be the great, holy, religious teacher, and he's going to the home of Zacchaeus. And sometimes in our lives, there are those who sit on our shoulders and they say to us, when Jesus comes and says to us, by name, come to me, there are people on our shoulder who are saying to us, you don't want to listen to that. You don't want to hear that. You don't deserve that. You're going to be honestly think that he's going to be interested in you after all that you've done, all that you've said, the thoughts that have come through your head. You honestly think that God's going to be interested in you, given your attitude and given your heart. Do you think that seriously God is going to call you by name? And we've got to look at those grumbling comments and say, he's called me. And there's forgiveness. And there's life in him. There's life in him. Because he has sought me out. He has sought me. And he sought me to save me. He has sought me to bring me from death to life. That day in Zacchaeus' life was marked as the first day of his new eternal existence in Jesus Christ. Jesus speaks to us with a voice that calls us because he seeks us. Brother or sister in Christ, how often has Jesus come and spoken to you and you have not come down out of the tree? He's called you, believer. You are a believer, but he's called you to walk in a particular way, and you refuse to come down out of the tree. Far better up here. I'll stand and gaze on you from afar. But what we need to do is humble ourselves and climb down and say to him, I will give you what you desire. I will submit with humility. I will lay aside my pride. And I will give you all that you want. Because you, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the Creator of heaven and earth, came and sought me out. You came and you sought me and you changed my life. And I am going to submit with love and kindness to your beneficial guidance and authority. Is it not remarkable that he comes and he seeks us? Unbeliever, If he's speaking to you tonight, you come down out of that tree. You're standing gazing at Jesus. You want to taste him. You want to see him. You want to be a part of what's going on here, but you're sort of hanging on the edges. Well, if he speaks to you tonight, you come down. Fellow Christian, if he speaks to you by name and he says to you, come down and have dealings with me concerning this matter that you've been holding on to for the past week or the past month or the past year or the past 5 years or however long it's been, come down and we'll have dealings with it tonight. You come down. In the name of God, come down. Don't stand and gaze from afar. He's come seeking you for a purpose. Take him home with you. Sit and speak with him. Listen to what he has to say. Listen to him. Listen to him. Listen to his voice. Submit to it. Receive it. And then gladly go your way. That salvation may be found in your home this night to the glory of God. Amen.